As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
6:13, Tommy Tucker, WWL, Good Friday, April the 18th, heading into the Easter weekend. Today, warmer than it was yesterday. It was a little toasty outside yesterday. You know, I got Teddy the puppy, but he's solid black, and it's amazing how quickly that fur picks up and absorbs the heat. I mean, he's out in the sun for like a minute, and you can fry an egg on his back. It'd be a little hairy, but, you know. Anyway, highs of 84 today, 83 tomorrow with clouds. Then Sunday, Easter Sunday, highs of 82 and cloudy. But the good news is dry, no rain until Monday as it stands now. And then next week, we'll be into the upper 70s, 80s, maybe a chance for showers throughout the week. So we'll see how that plays out. You know how this show works. You come in with a skull full of mush, and if you survive, you leave thinking like a lawyer. Mr. Schultz, stand up and give us the facts of the case with Trump and the Supreme Court. I'm just kidding. David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University. How you doing, David?
I am doing great, but I guess happy Easter in advance of it.
Yeah, let me annotate that bit just now, because for those that don't know, that's from the paper chase with John Houseman, and the millennials can Google it to see what the hell I was talking about. Now, let's move on to real life. Sometimes one case can change a nation, where it involves one person, and if you look at Miranda, right, what happened with him, with the Miranda rights, if you look at what happened with the integration of schools and what happened there, New Orleans had a hand in that. So when it comes to the person that the Supreme Court, or not the Supreme Court, that President Trump's administration sent to El Salvador, that's prompted some court action. And tell us, if you will, David, and seriously, about the facts of the case. Tell us how we got to where we are and where the Trump administration is with court orders, et cetera.
Well, as we know, the Trump administration, or Trump, said that he wants to deport lots of people who are illegal in the United States. They did a roundup several weeks ago of individuals, and including in that group of individuals was a person who was deported even though he had no criminal record in the United States. And these deportations were occurring without hearings, which are required under our U.S. Constitution. Like, this is not the movie Casablanca, where you just round up the usual suspects. It's supposed to be you have hearings, you make determinations, and then before you can take any kind of action. So anyhow, he rounds up this individual along with others, puts him on a plane, is challenged, and the judge orders and says, hey, you can't deport these people without some type of a hearing to determine whether or not what you're doing is legal or illegal, or whether that person deserves to be deported, and orders the government to turn the planes around. It appears now, according to all the facts, that the Secretary of State and the government disregarded what the order was to bring them back, and then the judge has said, well, what I want you to do now is to give me daily reports on bringing this person back to the United States. I want you to do everything you can. And the simple answer is that it does not look like the Trump administration is cooperating and disregarding. And so now we're getting to the point right now where it looks like the Trump administration has basically, you know, given its, you know, has basically
middle finger.
Middle finger. I'm trying to decide if I can say that. The middle finger, you know, to the judge. And the judge is now saying, we are contemplating contempt of court against individuals in the Trump administration. This is not just about one person. This is about a broader issue about the Constitution, due process. It's about the right of people to have hearings before the government just rounds you up. And that's why this is such a significant case, because it's one person, but it's about a broader principle.
That's why I, if I might say so, David, brilliantly started it with Miranda and the integration of schools, where it starts with one case and then it stands and then it changes, or it leads to a big national confrontation, if you will. And here's what I'm trying to get to, and I'm kidding about being brilliant, but to me, this, we got two railroad tracks here that are heading toward each other. One is President Trump and executive orders and what he wants to do. And the other is the court system and the Constitution. And at some point, it's going to lead to, and correct me if I'm wrong, but at some point, it's going to lead to the Supreme Court either backing President Trump and unlimited executive orders or standing up for the Constitution. Am I being overly dramatic or not?
I don't think you're being overly dramatic, because what I would teach in my law school classes going back to 1776, first is what? We are a country that hated and was born of hating and fearing strong central power. We hated kings. We hated royalty. We said, no, we want a limited government. And the government we created in 1787, our Constitution, all of us know the words. Checks and balances, separation of powers. We eventually came to adopt the idea that at the end of the day, the courts get to make the call on whether things are constitutional or not. This is about as, I got to call it, I could call it like American politics or constitutional law 101. Mm-hmm. It's the basics. And even if a lot of listeners out there say, I still don't care about this guy. Well, it's about the basic idea that if the government stops us, you know, or suspects us of doing something, they're supposed to give us a hearing. They're supposed to carry the burden of proof to prove we're guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. As we saw on all the television shows we watch with cops and robbers, it's about, again, as I say to my students, the most basic of bedrock principles about what it's supposed to be in a free society in the United States.
And that's, thank you for saying that, because that's the point I was trying to make. It's not about this one guy. It goes a lot bigger than that. And a lot, it means a lot more than that. So first of all, for those that are President Trump's fans and think that I'm knocking him, I'm not. If I were President Trump, I'd do the same thing. If I was the president and I had a view of the country and I would let me go as far as I go, I'd keep pushing it till they told me to stop, because that, I guess, the power of the Oval Office and bully pulpit, whatever you want to call it, is massive. However, also as a citizen, I'm concerned that this president might set precedents that the next president, and if you're a Trump fan, you got to be aware of this, that, you know, next time it might not be your guy or your woman that's in office, and maybe President Trump establishes some powers for a president that you don't want the next president to have. And I'm just trying to look at it in the bigger picture and take it out of a political context. That's accurate, is it not?
I think it's accurate, and I'm going to put it even in a longer perspective. We have probably, over the course of 250 years, and I'm going to say at least since, let's say at least since the middle of the 20th century, given too much power to the presidency, regardless of which party it is. There was a famous historian, Arthur Schlesinger Jr., back in the 1960s or 70s, wrote a book called The Imperial Presidency. And I think that book has turned out to be really correct, where he wrote back then, what, 60 years ago, he said, hey, I'm warning you folks, we're giving too much power to the president. And if we ever learned anything, what's that old adage? Power corrupts, mm-hmm. Absolute power corrupts, absolutely. And he said, we got to figure out a way of decreasing some of the power that we're given to the president. And a lot of it has happened because my words, not his. I always say to my students, because Congress is full of a bunch of weasels. And what I mean by that, Congress keeps saying, well, we don't want to do it. We'll kick it over to the president. We don't want to do it. We'll kick it over to the president like that. And we keep kicking all that stuff, the tough decisions over there. What are you eventually going to get? A too powerful of a president. And that's where Trump is now. He is kind of, I don't know, I'm looking at the apex, the top of a pyramid. I'm not sure what a metaphor looking for, but he is the product in part right now of too much power that we've given to the presidency.
And I'll put it in this example, and this might be an accurate way. It's kind of like the rules of golf. Sometimes they favor you, sometimes they don't. The president is going by whatever hole there is in the rule book right now and saying, all right, now I'm going to move the ball wherever I want it to be, and I'm going to keep doing it until you tell me to stop. Some texts that are coming to Oquinar Jeweler Talking. Text line 504-260-1870. Text, data, and message rates apply. Please don't text and drive. And David, you can respond on respond to all of this. Also ask you yes about the latest issue that Trump wants to deport U.S. citizen lawbreakers, which is totally against the Constitution. Another text says he's an illegal immigrant. And again, the issue is more than about this one guy. Another text says, I don't understand the statement. He or she was here illegally but did not have a criminal record and was deported. What if I don't have a criminal record and get pulled over for DUI and brought to jail? Should I not be brought to jail because I didn't have a criminal record? I'm not pro or con Trump. I just don't understand the logic. And then somebody else said, of course, it's always comes back to the same thing, like when Biden ignored the Supreme Court. And you can address when this has happened previously and what happens if the president ignores the Supreme Court. 6:22 and a half, traffic now, WWL. 6:27 and a half. Tommy Tucker, quickly back to David Schultz, professor of law and political science, our friend, our guest at Hamline University. David, you read the text, or you heard the text that I read before. You want to respond to which ones? Go ahead. David, you there? You got me muted? David might be reading the screenshot of the text I sent him and has me muted.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Zoe. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
David? David Schultz, do you have me on mute? David, you there? David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University. The texts were about the president and the Supreme Court. And as somebody said, ask your guest about the latest issue that Trump wants to deport. Huh? David, you there? Okay. Well, you know what we're going to do? Since David's not there, and we had an interesting conversation going. Whenever we have technical issues, sometimes I have to call an audible. Remember when Drew Brees used to say kill, kill, or Peyton Manning used to say Omaha, Omaha? I'm going to call an audible right here. We're going to do a quick version of what? Right now what? Right now he might be on. What the hell does that mean? David, are you there?
I'm there. For some reason, it went dead silent. I couldn't get any. We were connected, but dead silent.
Yeah. We got a minute left. Wrap it up.
Okay. Right. Okay. Okay. So where we want to wrap it up at this point is I want to do an example, is that even though somebody might be illegal in the United States, they're still entitled to their day in court. I have a friend or somebody I met recently who represented the person who tried to assassinate Ronald Reagan back in the 1980s. And even though that was caught on tape, that was like Mark David Chapman or somebody like that.
Reagan. I got you. Okay.
But the point being is that even though everybody saw it on tape, that person was still entitled to a hearing and for the government to prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's what's really going on here. It's that broader point is that the government in a free society, supposedly as ours, bears the burden of proof. And even though you're accused of doing something illegal, even though you're accused of being maybe not in the United States legal, you have your right to a hearing in court to explain and force the government to prove its case.
So bottom line is, if there's no due process, you don't really have a way of proving you're a citizen. The government can just say you're not, and that's it, right?
Exactly. That's the problem.
All right. Thank you, David. Appreciate your time. We'll take a break. Come back. Right now, time for WWL First News. All right, 6:45, quarter till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Man, an exciting game for LSU baseball last night. Here to tell us more about it, Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing well, Tommy. How about yourself?
I'm good. Y'all ready for the Easter weekend?
I think so. Yep.
Big family gathering. Like what you guys got planned?
Not much. It's this late Easter. It's just crazy. Before we know it, it's going to be Memorial Day. Very weird to have it this late.
Real quick, before we get to LSU baseball, I'm thinking about changing the name of my dog, who's been named. He's been through two names already, and I think I finally found a right name for him. Have you ever changed the name of a pet or not, or do you think that's acceptable?
No, I have not. I have not done that.
Kids are different. Pets, I think I got a couple of months leeway on this. Anyway, let's talk about LSU and Alabama last night.
Man, what a game last night, Tommy. It was one of those classic games at the box where, man, you know, the first few innings just not going well. The other team builds up a lead. And why I say it's one of those classic games at Alec Box Stadium, we've seen it so many times that once LSU is able to turn the momentum in its favor, they just run away with it. And last night was a perfect example of it. Scoring 10 unanswered runs. They are down 5-1. It's looking bleak. Even Jay Johnson getting a little desperate, going with Josh Pearson and gets the big pinch hit single. And then he pinch hits Ashton Larson. Larson was someone that played a lot last season as a freshman, especially in SEC play, made the freshman All-American team. But this year, he's been riding the pine. He's only got one at-bat in SEC play, and that came last weekend, heading into last night's game. And what does he do? He rewards Jay Johnson and his teammates by smoking a three-run homer, gets LSU within one run. And then in the next inning, LSU hits another three-run homer. Steven Milam gives LSU the lead, and then with the way Cason Evans has been pitching, you can't mount any rallies against this guy. He's been nearly perfect this season as a freshman. He does the job, ends up being the winning pitcher, and just a great game. You get an Alabama assistant coach who gets tossed for arguing what should have been ball four. Justin LeBron should have walked there for Alabama, and that would have loaded the bases after LSU got within one run. He strikes out. And then LSU gets another call prior to the Steven Milam three-run homer. Jared Jones should have struck out. Instead, he walks on a pitch that looked like it hit the outer half of the plate. He walks. That sets up Milam's three-run homer. So it just unraveled for Alabama. And again, once that momentum really swung in LSU's favor, once again, another opponent just doesn't have a chance at Alec Box Stadium. Once that momentum and the crowd really gets into it, like it did last night, they didn't have a chance.
I don't want you to say anything wrong here on the air, okay? But generally speaking, is there one line? Is it a cumulative effect, or is there one line that a coach crosses that'll get him tossed?
Well, I don't blame him for getting tossed.
No, I'm not either. I'm just wondering what it is that's what's the tipping point?
And if you notice, he really at first, the home plate umpire allowed the verbal beating from the first base coach from Alabama. And it wasn't until he had walked away from him, you know, because he's at the first base coach's box. Mm-hmm. Justin LeBron strikes out on a pitch that looks very low. And even Cason Evans admitted it after the game. He didn't think – and you could tell by Cason Evans' reaction. I mean, usually when you strike out a guy – with runners in scoring position late in the game, you run off the mound and you're excited and you're pumping your chest and you're firing up your teammates. Cason Evans was like, what? Okay, that's strike three. I'll just walk back to the dugout. But the Alabama first base coach, he was really fired up, and I don't blame him. It was a crucial moment in the game. Alabama was trying to get the momentum back in their favor after Ashton Larson hit that three-run homer. They had their best hitter at the plate. That should have been ball four. It should have been bases loaded for Alabama at that point. Instead, it's strike three. The LSU fans are going crazy. So the Alabama first base coach, as he's going back to the first or third base dugout, he's got a long time there to just get into the umpire, just scream at him. And that's what he was doing. And it wasn't until he had walked like 10 feet past him that the home plate umpire finally ejected him. So I think in a way, just the way it would look, the umpire realized that he missed the call. Mm-hmm. And so he allowed the first base coach to have a say. But when he kept talking as he went towards the dugout, and then obviously he said some sort of magic word, and then that was it.
Oh, there's again, nothing.
That just motivated the LSU team even more. I think it was Ashton Larson that said that. It might have been Ashton Larson or Cason Evans, one of the two, said that last night, that when the coach got ejected, that got the team even more fired up.
There's nothing that'll get anybody, some people, angrier than when they make a mistake and you call them out, and you continue to call them out, and they can refuse to admit that they made a mistake, and they keep backing themselves into a corner, and the only out they have is to react angrily, which is probably what the umpire did. I've always wondered, though, like you're talking about, is it something a guy says when he's got his back turned? Does it turn personal? Is it about the mother? Is it about the wife or something? You understand what I'm saying? Proclivities?
Yeah.
I just always wonder what that tipping point is, or maybe it's just a cumulative effect. We'll take a break, pick it up. We come back talking LSU baseball with Jeff Palermo, 6:51, 9 till 7, traffic now, WWL. 6:56, 4 till 7, thrilling LSU victory last night on a diamond at the box. Jeff Palermo, WWL.com, columnist, Louisiana Network news director, joins us. Jeff is excited and as happy as I am about the win. Let's talk about Cade Anderson, if we can.
Yeah, not his best performance, right? I mean,
and coming off of the right, wasn't he the performance with the 100-something pitches? Or do I have my guy confused?
Yeah, two starts ago, he had the complete game shutout where he threw 135 pitches. And
yeah.
Last week, I thought he pitched pretty well. He still gave up. I think he gave up 5 runs last week. But if LSU turns a double play, Cade Anderson has a much better night statistically last week. And then last night, he strikes out 10. He doesn't walk anyone, but yet he gives up 4 home runs. And that just tells you that for the most part, he's dialed in. But there are times where he's just leaving the ball over the heart of the plate and guys are whacking it out of the park.
So how do you fix that?
Well, Jay Johnson at the end of the game didn't seem too concerned. Now, granted, Jay Johnson is someone to never really – express any kind of frustration or concerns about his players. He's never one to really throw anybody under, not to say he would throw Cade Anderson under the bus last night, but he's hardly ever critical about a player with the media after the game. And he did bring up a good point. The ball was traveling last night. I mean, Ethan Frye's 2-run homer last night looked like it was going to be a routine fly ball to the right fielder, and it just kept carrying it and went out of the park. So there were 7 home runs hit in that game last night. So the ball was carrying out over the fence. But Cade Anderson just got to be a little bit better with his command. He's good enough where he's not walking people, and it could be worse for him if he was walking people. At least he's just giving up, for the most part, solo home runs or 2-run home runs. He's not, walking a couple guys and then giving up the 3-run homer, because as we saw last night, how devastating a 3-run homer can be. LSU hit 2 of them last night, and Alabama was down for the count. So I think it's obviously something that Nate Yeske is going to try to work with him on, making sure that, if he's going to miss a spot, just don't leave it over the heart of the plate for these guys to get a good swing on it and hit it out of the ballpark.
Jeff, only 60 seconds left. I do want to talk about LSU football. Spring practice over with, transfer portal, and Brian Kelly's handling of it. What happens from here with LSU football?
Well, we've seen a couple guys, some of the guys on the bottom of the depth chart have entered the transfer portal. I think he's hoping that most of the main guys come back. I think that's what's going to occur, and I don't really see LSU diving in there and trying to acquire more players out of the transfer portal. He told us on Tuesday he likes his roster, and he thinks it's good enough to compete next year for a championship.
So what happens now? Just weightlifting and all that stuff until
they'll take a little bit of a break here, but really I think it gets really going again once the spring semester is over with, maybe around June 1st or something. That's when they really start dialing in onto the off-season conditioning program.
Gotta hit that weight room. Thank you, Jeff. Yep. Appreciate your time. We'll talk to Sydney Torres as we come back about this French Quarter garbage debacle. Tommy Tucker, WWL.